Welcome to She Is Never Lost, But At Least She Has Wine, a podcast made just for you. Your host is Felicia Stitzel, world traveler and influencer, professional photographer, sommelier, Navy veteran, and mom. Tune in every Thursday for solo episodes where she shares her life story and a wine highlight. Pour yourself a glass and let's dive in.
Hey, hi, and hello to all of my wonderful listeners, all of my wine lovers and wanderlusters. I am so excited because this is the final countdown to the end of season 3. Woo! I know, I'm probably a little bit more excited than you guys are just because I'm the one who's recording them and you're the one who's listening to them, but it's just really exciting for me because, like I've said multiple times, I really didn't think that I would ever actually, like, be here finishing up or getting close to season 3, very end, and start getting ready to start recording season 4. So, if you guys have any feedback on things that you guys want to hear going into season 4, more guests, more topics, more of those things, please comment on whatever platform that you listen to. Leave me a comment or send me a message on Facebook or Instagram to tell me what you guys really think about this podcast and what you'd like to hear more of, because I love to hear your guys' feedback and I love to hear what you would actually want to sit and listen to. So today we've got a photography-centric podcast, so I'm going to give you some tips and tricks from my photography side, because of course I have multiple sides. Not to say that I'm schizophrenic or anything, but lots of different interests. So, but of course, before we get into that, I'm going to share the wine with you guys. I am picking kind of a crazy one, but I figured it's almost thematic in a really funny way. So I figured, what the heck, why not? This is a blue wine. Let me reiterate that again. It's a blue wine. Now, I've had a blue Moscato before, and it's basically like cough syrup. It is super, super sweet, super rich, super, super, super. It was just way too much of everything. Wasn't personally a favorite of mine, but I can definitely see how it would be very refreshing. And it's kind of a fun concept though. So, you know, like I said, personally, not something that I would go after every time I would go for a Moscato. But I can definitely see why it would be fun, because you're drinking blue wine. I mean, that's just a fun novelty all by itself. This, however, is, from what I'm told, it was a wine gift. It's kind of a fun thing. Well, it's kind of fun being me, because I have all of these friends who turn to me with all of these questions about wine. And then when they want to share really cool wines with me, or they find something that they want to hear my insight and my perspective on, they get me bottles of wine. So it's definitely fun to be me sometimes. Plus, I mean, I have friends who still love me after listening to all of my crazy wine nerdiness. So thank God I have good friends. This is called Mar Blu, and it is from a winery here in Spain, Bodegas Ruiz Torres. And it says, all right, so this is a winery that's been established in 1870. I don't think they're making blue wine back in 1870, but obviously they have adapted to change with the times. It's 10% alcohol, and yeah, I'm really intrigued by this. It says it's not a Moscato, and I have not tasted this. Like, I literally opened this and got it out of the fridge 5 minutes ago, and I'm already 4 minutes into this recording, so if that tells you anything. All right, so now we're going to give it a whirl. Oh, it definitely does not smell like a Moscato. Not even a little. Wow. It almost smells like a Verdejo. Okay. Whew. So on the nose, like, I was picking up, it smells like paint fumes. Like, not in a bad way, but it's like, it's a more chemically smell to it. At least in this glass, it's, I don't know, it's like nail polish. Like, you walk into a nail salon kind of smell. It smells a little chemically, but it's not like over predominant. You can still kind of smell like a little bit of like pear, but it's like fermented pear, if that makes sense. definitely a strong alcohol smell on this wine. So there's not really like a lot else that I can pick up from it. And maybe it's my glass. Maybe it's my nose being weird. Maybe it's the wine. There's a lot of factors that could possibly work its way into why I'm not smelling as well as I possibly could be. No, it's not COVID. But needless to say, I'm not getting very much on the nose. So I don't really have much to say on it. The taste, however, it's very interesting. Like, it can't figure out if it wants to be sweet or dry. But like when it first hits your mouth, it's really sweet. And then as you swallow it, it starts really drying your mouth out. And it's like has this like weird acidity to it. But with the like strong sugar in the beginning, it's like super sweet and fruity. Honestly, I actually think that this would be really good as like a wine smoothie. If I was to mix it up and turn it into a smoothie versus it just drinking it by itself, I feel like it'd actually make more sense to drink it as a smoothie form versus like just as a normal glass of wine. Because there's like something that's just not adding up about this wine. And I can't figure out what it is. But I think that if I was to put it into a smoothie form, it would make more sense. I don't know. Does that make sense? I don't know. Needless to say, I think that it was fun to pair a blue wine with my story today. So I'm going to let you guys ponder this whole blue wine thing a little bit longer. And I'm going to dive into the story, which is my tips and tricks from a photographer, which is how to take fabulous beach photos. I have to share this because, one, who doesn't love taking super awesome, Instagram-worthy, sexy AF photos on the beach, right? Everybody wants to have like that perfect photo to share of your perfect vacation out on the beach. You want the beautiful blue water, you want the sand. But if you're a photographer and you're taking your camera out and you don't want to get sand everywhere and you're, I don't know, there's like a lot of stuff going on whenever you take your camera. You're very expensive normally. Like we're not talking photography on your phone. We're talking like with an actual camera. Now you can still use a lot of these tips if you're doing, cell phone photography. A lot of these points are still going to be applicable to what you're going to be trying to capture. But for the most part, I did write it as a photographer using an actual camera. So keep that in mind a little bit. So if you've ever been to the beach with your camera, you know that there can be a lot of challenges in, you know, photographing in such a luxurious location. For one, there's always the sand. But then you also have this fear of taking your camera to the beach. And what if you get hit by this sudden wave? And then suddenly your beautiful, very expensive camera is not only soaked, it's soaked with salt water. And then there's sand everywhere. You definitely don't want that to happen. So make sure that you are keeping a good eye on your equipment when you go. Be very mindful of your settings. But this is not that. This is a tip on actually how to take beautiful pictures, not how to protect your camera. Protecting your camera is just be smart and cognizant of your surroundings. How to take a good picture though, tip one, bracket every shot. Now, if you're not a photographer, you're not aware of what this term means, bracketing your shot means that you're going to intentionally underexpose your shot. So on your light meter, there is going to be your line and you've got your medium line, your under and your overexposed line. So you're going to intentionally underexpose by either using your shutter speed or your f-stop. I prefer to use both. And what I do is I do one shutter speed and then I go back up and then I do one f-stop. And so I kind of see which one, depending on what I'm shooting. If I'm just shooting the landscape, I do both. So I do two underexposed shots. I do perfectly exposed shots. Obviously, digital world, I can take thousands if I want to of my quote unquote, according to my light meter, a perfect shot. And then I overexpose. You want to do this because the beach has a lot of light. I know, kind of stating the obvious here, but because the sunlight is reflecting off of the water and the sand and the seashells, there's a lot of variable situations that you're going to have because of the light source. This includes when you've got people in your shot and you're trying to angle it and then suddenly you're getting a light reflection from somebody's cell phone, people wearing jewelry, even in your photos, people wearing jewelry are going to play with your light meter. So I say this because you can't always base your photos taking a good picture just from your light meter. Your light meter is there to help guide you. But obviously the camera is going to be picking up a lot of different things. And so depending on where your sensor is located in your camera, is going to really depend on what your camera is then going to be reading for the light meter and then what you're going to bracket. So this is something that in order to avoid taking pictures and you look at them later and all of your shots are ruined because your light meter was reading on the wrong spot, you want to make sure that you're bracketing. And that is, you know, I like doing the shutter speed and the focal length, you know, and then the f-stop. I like to variable a lot of different things because, you know, if you change angles or if you change directions from the sun, obviously all of your previous settings are going to change and differ. So what you want to do is, I highly suggest doing this in any photography setting, is to always bracket your shots because sometimes, you know, you never know. Maybe your mood and how you're capturing that photo, maybe it was really good that you wanted to keep it underexposed or it just needed to be just slightly overexposed. These are things that you want to do in almost any situation, but definitely specifically when you're dealing with a lot of sunlight on a lot of reflecting surfaces, you're going to want to bracket. All right, the next one is spot metering. Once again, these are going to be a lot of photography terms, so I'm going to explain the spot metering as well. So spot metering means that you are, it's a tool that you have in order to help expose, especially for like if you're doing portraits on the beach, using spot metering is going to be really helpful for you. You're able to expose your subject's skin and color hue rather than the surrounding area. So I love my little spot meter, and I've got like a big one that goes with my studio kit, and then I've got my little one with the travel or like my more mobile one when I'm doing like on location shots. It helps because if you do the matrix metering, which is what we were doing, what we were just talking about before with your light meter, it's called a matrix meter. And if you use that solely and you're doing like portraits on the beach, you can have a subject that's like blown out on one side or is overexposed, underexposed. Obviously, you're going to need to know what you're doing with your angles to make sure you don't have one side of your model way overexposed and the other side is way underexposed. Unless you're looking for like a yin and yang kind of shot, but that's all up to a creative insight. But I love my spot meter because it really does help me expose what's going to be perfect for my subject's face and their skin tone. So obviously if I have somebody who is very pale, my metering and my settings are not going to be the same as for somebody who has a darker skin tone or somebody who's better tanned or stuff like that. Even sometimes I meter to their clothes. So even if you want to start getting into the habit of metering twice, meter somebody's face and then their clothes, because if they're wearing super bright clothes, obviously that can also be something that would end up becoming very blown out. So just a little tip on that one. All right, next one is pack a lens hood. And this is a big deal. And I don't normally like to work with lens hoods because sometimes they crop your photo a little bit because they're like this weird... there's this weird image in your photo, and unless you zoom past it, there's like a lot of things that I don't personally prefer to use and I don't like because of the lens hood. But when shooting at the beach, I highly recommend packing a lens hood just because of the extra amount of light that's coming in and bouncing off of every surface like we talked about. You're going to need to find something that's going to help contain how much light is being captured in your image without over or underexposing your photos every time and having to do a ton of post-production editing later. I say this because personally, as a photographer, I grew up old school. I grew up with film in a dark room. I grew up with, if you didn't catch it in your camera, there's very little that you can do with it. Obviously, there are a lot of old school darkroom techniques to kind of help be artistic and play with things. And I mean, photography has endless possibilities. But if you're not going to want to do a ton of post-production, then obviously you're going to want to do the most that you can do to get the best shot in your camera itself. And one of those tools that you can do is to carry a lens hood with you. And what's nice is that you can pop it on and pop it off depending on if you actually need it. So don't feel like if just because it's on, it has to stay on. Tip number four, keep an eye on your horizon. I know that this is not a tip that most people are gonna think about when I'm talking about giving you tips to photograph the beach, but if you're going to have the horizon going across somebody's face or neck or something at that angle, it's actually going to make the person look choppy. And I'm sure most of us have seen there are these photos on Instagram of people standing on the beach, and there's like this beautiful white sand beach, and then you can see the layers of color in the ocean, and the person standing in front is wearing clothes that match those same colors, and they chop it at the lines of where the color gets changed in the ocean. That is a very, very cool idea and angle, and that makes sense. You've intentionally chopped up, you know, quote unquote, this is not a Dexter. You've intentionally chopped them throughout the photo because it was the artistic angle that you were going for. It made sense. If it doesn't make sense though, you're going to make your subject look awkward and choppy. I learned this a lot when I was an MC in the Navy, and you don't think about, like, when you're out on the flight deck or you're outside and you're taking pictures of somebody and the ship is moving and suddenly you're looking at the background and the horizon is like at this really weird angle. And I never would have thought of it had a mother, I posted this picture on social media of a sailor getting an award out on the beach or out on the flight deck. And there was a mom who commented and they were like, oh my gosh, it looks like you guys are like laying on its side and the horizon is like super tilted. Are you guys okay? Were you in choppy seas? If you were in choppy seas while you're outside, and oh my God, it turned into a whole ordeal. Obviously, you probably don't want to have to deal with that. So my suggestion would be to always keep your eye on the horizon when you're taking pictures of your subject. Now, you can do a lot of modifications to kind of help layer, like to angle that out in the end. But once again, it really depends on how much post-editing you really want to do in your photos. If you don't want to do a ton, these are the kinds of tips that are going to help you not have to go through all of that extra work. Because you really do want flowing lines throughout your images instead of like sharp, contrasting, like choppy lines. It's another reason why you don't chop people off at certain angles on their body, like at a like between a joint. Like if you cut somebody or you crop an image and it's like between the shins, it's like I had a PAO who he taught me. It's like, you know, if you're gonna chop, always chop at a joint. Chop at the knees, chop at the ankles, even though that's weird, you probably shouldn't, just give them the feet anyways. But if you have to, always chop at a joint. Some of the greatest tips I've ever gotten was ones that I got when I was in the military. All right, so tip number 5, photographing on popular beaches. So this one's going to be really hard, especially like we're into going to spring break right now around the world, at least in the Northern Hemisphere for a lot of schools and stuff. And of course, most people, when they think spring break, they think Miami Beach, Florida, you're out on the beach, beaches are packed. So if you're trying to take like super awesome, you know, social media worthy photos on a beach, especially right now, be mindful of that. Obviously, there's going to be only so much that you can do if there aren't a lot of beach options around you. But if you have the opportunity to maybe either drive a little bit farther or to go out when it's cold, like go out first thing in the morning, while people are still waking up or getting ready to go to work, mornings at beaches are way less populated than they are at night. If you're going to go at night, it's going to end up becoming like you're going to be fighting with people who want to take the perfect picture during the sunset. You're going to be fighting with people who are getting ready to leave and they're hauling all their crap out. There's a lot of things that you have to be really mindful of, especially when photographing on a popular beach. If you're taking pictures at a private beach, obviously, you're not going to have to worry about that because you don't have to angle your stuff as much to cut people out. The best tip that I can give about photographing at a popular beach is angles. Really, really captivate your angles, because it's amazing how, depending on where you're shooting from or how you're shooting and what angle you're shooting from, it could almost look like the beach was completely empty versus if you were to take it with the wrong angle, and you can see that there are literally hordes and hordes and hordes of people there. It is challenging. And if you're doing this for like a paid photo shoot, you might want to go to the beach a couple days early and scout different locations at different times. And you can see which one is maybe just a little less populated. Another recommendation is go during the week. Don't shoot on a weekend. Shoot in the middle of the week, like in the morning. It'd be like kind of a rule of thumb about photographing on a beach is because there's less people, that's not as warm, so there's not going to be as many people out, and you're still going to have good color contrast versus if it was later in the afternoon, you're going to still have good color contrast, but it's going to be more populated and you have to fight with angles and stuff. Play with it. That's really best suggestion is you got to play with it. You got to figure out how to make your angles really work for you. I had a photography teacher when I was taking classes at University of Alaska Fairbanks. And this is like my first photography class. I was 16. Yes, you can take college classes when you're 16. You just have to ask special permission. Best tip he ever gave me was he said, if you're not actually working for the photo, you didn't really earn it. And everybody was like, seriously? Like, this isn't Vietnam. Like, you don't have to crawl through the trenches to get the best shot kind of deal. And his example was, is like, you know, if you're not willing to kneel or possibly contort your body into like this really, really weird, uncomfortable looking shape in order to get the best shot, the best angle, then you really didn't earn it. And there is this really funny meme that's on social media that it's like photographer's yoga and they have all these really, really weird positions and this little stickman figure doing these weird positions that photographers do actually do. Because sometimes you have to put yourself in a weird position to get the best shot. Be willing to kneel for it. Be willing to work for it. That's really the best advice that I can give on that point. All right, next one. Be mindful of your gear. Like I said at the beginning, you don't want sand to get into everything. And if, as we know, whenever you go to the beach, you could literally walk out barefoot and somehow, some way, you still have sand like behind your ears. I don't know how this happens, but it does. So be mindful of your gear. It is way too easy for sand to get into your bag when you're changing lenses. And then once you change out your lens and you start to snap it back into place and you hear that with the sound of sand grinding between your very, very sensitive cavities and near your mirrors and your camera, your heart just sinks. And you're just like, oh no. And then, as I said in the beginning, even worse, if you get caught up photographing like the perfect moment and then suddenly you drop your bag in the ocean. I suggest either having a backpack or two straps on a side bag, because there was one time where I had a side bag and the clip snapped. I don't know what happened. Like, I swear it just, the clip just was like, all right, I'm out, done my job. I'm done. I can't do this anymore. I quit. I'm gonna go collect unemployment. Like, it literally just quit. And I almost dropped my entire kit into the ocean because I was taking this really awesome boudoir maternity photo shoot and we were doing like sea foam with her little sheen that she had around her. It was beautiful, absolutely gorgeous work. But needless to say, I had two back-to-back heart attacks because it was like catch, almost drop. And then I finally was just like, I need to go sit down for a minute and collect myself because I'm pretty sure I had two minor heart attacks. Tip number 7, time changes. Now, if you've been doing photography for almost any amount of time and you've done any kind of studying with it, you will know what this means. And I am referring to the golden hour and your blue hours. Once again, talking about your light. Beaches get tons and tons of light. But because you want, depending on the feel that you want to capture in your photo, you don't want to take pictures at high noon. It's hard light, it's hard shadows, and it's really hard to fix those even in post-editing. That's why, once again, I suggest taking pictures earlier in the morning where the shadows are not as harsh. But if you really want to get some great photos with some beautiful ambient light, I recommend shooting either during golden hours or blue hours. So blue hour is like first thing as the sun is rising, the morning is still cool, and that's when you get like the blue tones. And that's because atmosphere is still warming up, the sun is still warming up, everything is still waking up, and you get that blue tone. Golden hours last much longer because that's when the sun is setting, so you can time it much better. I like golden hour personally, but I have been able to take some really cool shots with blue hours at the beach, but I've actually done a ton of really cool work with ice photography and snow frozen photography during blue hours because it just kind of really works together. Plus, in Alaska, blue hours in the wintertime is like 11 o'clock in the morning. So obviously, I don't have to wake up very early to capture that time. The reason why this is important is the hues, the tones, and the atmosphere that you're going to capture during these time zones. Once again, we talked about how
In the afternoon, hard light, hard shadows. In the evening, you have softer tones. You can wear different colors, and that's going to actually create more of an ambiance to your photo than if you were to shoot that same dress, let's say a coral dress, because coral in the ocean, you know, it's pretty. If you were to shoot that same color at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, they are going to look completely different. Your subject's possibly going to look washed out versus during the golden hour, that same coral dress with your, let's say, Norwegian subject, she or he is going to, well, if they're wearing a dress, you know what? Wearing a dress to he or she anyways. They are going to look more tanned. Their tones on their skin are going to look a lot softer, and they're going to look have like this glow ambiance to their skin. Gorgeous. In the morning, they're going to have a little bit more softer tones, but it's not going to be quite as much as the golden hour. So this is why I recommend scout. Scout your location, scout the times, know when the sun rises and the sun sets. Understand what color tones you're wanting. Talk to your models about what kind of colors they're going to be wearing. What are they looking to do? There is a ton of fun that you can have with taking these pictures and to get the different feels throughout just using different lights. I mean, you don't even have to change outfits or location just based on the time. You could have almost 3 different photo shoots just on that. Last tip is if you're working in a new location and situations you've never photographed before, give yourself more time. And before you book anything with new clients, practice, practice, practice. You always, always have to practice, because if not, then you're not going to get the best shot that you can get, because if you don't understand your surroundings. So study, observe, practice, practice, and keep on clicking. I hope you guys enjoyed today's photography lesson. It's a little minor photography lesson and my really, really crazy description of this blue wine. I really am going to go try and make it into like a smoothie or a slushy or something. I need to turn it into something because I don't think that I can finish this bottle by itself in its current state. But of course, if you ever want to learn more about wine, wine trips, photography, travel tips, tricks, be sure to also follow my blog at thebackpackermom.com. Follow my social media with Pinterest and Facebook and Instagram, all being The Backpacker Mom. You're going to find some really fun stuff there. There are some really awesome trips that are coming up. I cannot wait to share them with you guys. But also, if you ever have any questions about tips, tricks, about wine, photography, travel, always feel free to send me a message on Facebook or a DM on Instagram, an email, whatever. There are lots of forms of communication out there, and I'm open to all of them. And I would love to help answer your questions. So until then, you can find all the information in the show notes and stay tuned, because there are lots and lots of cool stuff coming in season 4. Cheers, guys.